I just don't see any sense in it. You know, I didn't get elected to go back and forth on the airplane.
Some House members protest a plan to hold hearings in Anchorage. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 27th of April. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, elementary school students in Sitka unravel a science mystery.
Well, there was a little stream that was connected to the snow pile, and it was going into our street. So that was very suspicious.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Medallion Foundation, with safety training programs and 16 flight simulators statewide, supports the Alaska Airmen's Association trade show and convention on April 30th and May 1st at Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport. There'll be a full-motion Super Cub simulator for demonstration to the aviation public. The Medallion Foundation, changing the culture of flight safety. For more information, go to medallionfoundation.org. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
The House Finance Committee is taking the special legislative session to Anchorage. The committee will hold two hearings there on Friday. The first will cover energy projects in the state capital budget, with testimony from Alaska Energy Authority and Alaska Housing Finance Corporation officials. The second will give Attorney General John Burns a chance to discuss the contingency language Senate leaders have put on a package of projects to protect them from Governor Sean Parnell's veto threat. Yesterday, Burns said he believes the language is unconstitutional. A memo from the legislative lawyer released today says it's open to interpretation. At a House majority press conference today, Finance Co-Chair Bill Stoltz, a Chugiak Republican, says hearings held in Anchorage in the past have been a great success.
Another venue to discuss the issue, maybe a different set of fresh eyes of press on it.
Stoltz says the committee will not take any action. He says he floated the idea of meeting in Anchorage to other members of the caucus who agreed to it. He added, there's not a lot going on in Juneau right now. Most Democrats on the Finance Committee plan to skip the trip. Anchorage Representative Mike Dugan says it would be nice to sleep in his own bed, but the work is in Juneau.
I just don't see any sense in it. You know, I didn't get elected to go back and forth on the airplane. I got elected to try and do my part of getting good laws passed and reasonable budgets worked on and all the rest of that. None of that's going to happen on the airplane or in Anchorage or on the airplane coming back.
Dugan and Fairbanks Representative David Guttenberg will attend the hearings by teleconference from Juneau. Anchorage Representative Les Guerra will make the trip, so the minority has a presence in the room. Legislative Affairs Director Pam Varney says the state will provide airfare, per diem, and room and board for Finance Committee members and some staff during the trip. Among the few remaining issues that haven't been resolved during the legislative special session is whether the state's schools will get any increase in funding for next year. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
During the regular session and the opening days of the special session, the House Finance Committee removed $110 per student increases to the base student allocation from two different bills. Now the only option remaining is in the operating budget. It's less than $110, but it is still an increase. From their own, however, it gets complicated. The money is stuck behind a contingency requirement put in by the Senate. That requirement says the money will not get spent unless another bill passes to set money aside for funding school bonuses when oil prices are high. House Finance Co-Chair Bill Stoltz says that bill is not on the governor's call for the special session and will not be considered.
It's just bad policy tying appropriations to the contingency of passage of legislation, and we're just not really excited about. We put money in the budget or pass bills on their merit, and they don't need to be blackmailed or tied together. That's a real sticking point for the House.
Senate Finance Co-Chair Lyman Hoffman challenges the idea that the bill linked to the appropriation cannot be brought up. He says the wording of the governor's proclamation is open enough for it to be considered. However, he's not particular about that. He says as long as the contingency is in the bill, the money can be in the budget, just not spent until the bill passes, even if it's next year.
If they pass it in January, the districts could get the money this school year, but it would be in February. instead of, and be more difficult for them to budget on getting the funds. Ideally, it would be better to have the bill pass this year.
Hoffman says the House and Senate have next year to debate the merits of the bill, which basically falls into how schools will use the money. The House wants limits on heating and fuel needs. Hoffman says if they get extra money in February, there's no question it will be spent on energy. House Finance Co-Chair Bill Thomas is heading up the negotiations for the money. He says at least the two sides are talking.
Nobody was opposed to trying to help him. I don't think we knew that language is in there, so we'll work it out.
Bottom line is, should the schools be really starting to get scared now?
We've still got a few days.
Hoffman doesn't leave many options to the Operating Budgets Conference Committee other than accepting the Senate's contingency language.
Well, we could, or we could take the House's number, which is nothing, no language.
The conference committee has not scheduled any meetings through the weekend. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
An Alaska-based airman was one of eight U.S. troops killed today in Afghanistan. Officials at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Anchorage say the airman was assigned to the 11th Air Force based at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. A veteran Afghan military pilot said to be distressed over his personal finances opened fire at Kabul Airport after an argument today, killing the eight U.S. troops and an American civilian contractor. Those killed were trainers and advisors for the nascent Afghan Air Force. The airman's identity won't be released until 24 hours after family notification. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, chicken lovers in Anchorage make the case for their backyard birds.
I've had my chickens for 3 years now. They provide me with entertainment, joy, and learning experiences.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by GrantStation, your fast track to funding, on the web at grantstation.com, serving Alaskan organizations for over 10 years. And by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
A charter halibut group is discussing whether to continue trying to block a limited entry program in court. Charter Operators of Alaska earlier this month asked a U.S. District Court judge for an injunction against the program. A ruling yesterday denied that request. The Homer-based group met on the phone today but made no decision. President Jack Roskind of Whittier says they'll meet with members this weekend.
We're literally talking our livelihood. And, you know, what's it worth to us to fight for our businesses?
The federal limited entry system took effect in February. It impacts operators in Southeast and the Central Gulf. Limited entry is one of several efforts by NOAA Fisheries and other agencies to reduce the guided halibut catch, which has regularly exceeded its quota. Charter clients in Southeast Alaska are also limited to one fish per day, which can be no longer than 37 inches. The judge who rejected the injunction will preside over another hearing next week. Roskind says he is not optimistic.
We're not really anticipated to win that, and the sooner he makes a decision on it, the quicker we decide whether or not we have grounds to really appeal his decision.
The charter group, mostly made up of Gulf and Prince William Sound operators, says limited entry is putting about 330 people out of business. Many Southeast charter businesses supported the program when it was proposed several years ago, and they still do. Forrest Braden is interim executive director of the Sitka-based Southeast Alaska Guides Organization.
We have a limited amount of fish that we're given to fish on, and it doesn't make sense not to have some type of a cap on effort and industry involvement. So we're in full support of that.
Commercial fishermen have also faced substantial reductions in the amount of halibut they can catch. Julianne Curry of the Petersburg Vessel Owners Association says the new limitations for the guided fishery make sense.
About a third of the charter fleet was turning over every year, and that just doesn't really create an environment for regulatory stability. You don't really know who the players are because they're turning over all the time, so I think it's a step in the right direction.
The limited entry program issues charter permits to those who fished in 2008 and also either 2004 or 2005. Some but not all of the permits can be transferred to other operators. The lawsuit seeks to include businesses in existence through 2010. A major threat to an urban riparian system in Sitka has been removed. A team of researchers conducting a longitudinal study of Cutthroat Creek this winter discovered that hydrocarbons and possibly other pollutants were contaminating the waterway and threatening both plants and aquatic organisms. The source? A pile of snow plowed from the parking lot of a nearby elementary school. The scientists, fifth graders, studying the stream during their lunch recess. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
It's the lunchtime recess at Kitgushihin Elementary School. Most of the students are on the playground enjoying what, by Alaska standards, is a pretty mild spring day.
We recorded this one last time.
But it's not all play. On the other side of the fence, on the banks of a small stream called Cutthroat Creek, these students have their rubber boots on. They're measuring, sampling, and recording everything from insect life to stream flow to water chemistry to the size of the buds on the elderberry bushes.
3¾.
The fifth grade stream team in Rebecca Himshute's class has spent every lunch recess on Tuesdays and Thursdays since the beginning of school studying the Cutthroat Creek ecosystem. Toward the end of this winter, the stream teamers observed something quite significant happening at Cutthroat Creek.
2 days ago, during our weekly visit to Cutthroat Creek, we noticed there was oil or some other pollutant in the water.
This is Sydney Kimber reading a letter she and the other stream teamers sent to Sitka's City Hall.
That's when we discovered the snow pile had been plowed next to the Cutthroat Creek, appeared to be hanging over and melting into the creek.
A pile of plowed snow melting on a stream bank or on the beach is not an unusual sight in Sitka. But as Skylar Moore explains, something about this snow pile was not right.
Well, there was a little stream that was connected to the snow pile, and it was going into our stream. So that was very suspicious.
What did it look like?
It looked like regular water, but when it got into the stream, it looked very oily.
The snowmelt did have oil in it, along with antifreeze, which the students thought smelled like Sprite, and also road salts. The stream teamers collected a sample. It was very dark gray and silty, almost black, like something you might get out of a very nasty mud puddle. Max Johnson believed action was needed to protect the creek and the life in it.
Since we noticed that the chemicals were, like, affecting the stream, we knew it'd probably kill, like, wildlife. They either cutthroat and rainbow trout that live in Cutthroat Creek, or like animals that drink from it, like squirrels or birds even. Yeah, so we just decided to do something about it.
The problem there at Keet is that the parking lot is designed to drain down to the stream, which is a very typical way of doing storm drain drainage.
Stephen Weatherman is Sitka's municipal engineer.
Here in Sitka, you know, we're becoming more environmentally conscious, more environmentally in tune with what's going on. It's a salmon stream, I believe. And so it's a good idea to protect things like that. And if we can move the snow to a different location for it to melt and flow cross country through the grasses and bushes and stuff like that, that it helped filter the oil out and the other negative materials in there. And that's a pretty standard methodology of filtering storm runoff or snow runoff and stuff like that, is having it go through a biofilter as such.
The stream team's letter landed on Weatherman's desk at 4:30 in the afternoon one day. By 7:30 a.m. the following day, the snow pile was gone. Weatherman credits Mike Webb's road crew for the speedy work. It didn't necessarily matter that the appeal came from fifth graders.
You know, the fact that they were kids was interesting and neat at the same time, and we could go ahead and respond appropriate to them. It wasn't really it didn't take a lot of extra effort on our part to deal with it, but it could just as easily have been a parent group that said, we noticed this, or another environmental group in town that said something about it, and we would have responded the same way, because again, it's something that, you know, can be done, and we can do it, and there's no reason not to do it.
Weatherman says all new storm sewer work in Sitka, like most of Alaska's urban areas, will have sump systems that collect both sediments and oil before the runoff hits the streams or ocean. Finding a new location for the Kitgushihin snow pile that naturally filters the meltwater is an intermediate step.
So how do you feel about having written a letter that got that snowbank moved so it didn't melt into your stream?
Yay!
Hi,
happy.
The stream team's success doesn't feel like a huge victory. They weren't really asking for the world, just for the city to move a pile of snow that posed a threat to a stream that they understand probably better than anybody. That, says Marnie Chapman, one of the stream team parent helpers, is the win here.
You know, I think the biggest takeaway is an interest in science through observation skills. We've really seen a change in the kids over the course of the year as they've worked on it. You know, they're more interested now than when they started, just in being out there and being observers of nature and collecting their data and seeing what's going on. And they feel a real sense of ownership and sense of stewardship towards that trail, which is just what we wanted to see.
So what do you guys think? Would you like to run a quick test on some of this water from the snowbank and see if it's any different?
Yeah. Okay.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert
We're
Woolsey.
We might try the nitrate, and pH might make a difference, too, and that's a quick one.
Homes and offices are occupied again in the Kuskokwim village of Aniak 2 days after a dangerous gasoline spill caused an evacuation near a tank farm. Crawley Petroleum says the neighborhood surrounding the gasoline leak is safer after cleanup crews used specialized foam to dampen the spill's noxious fumes and pumps to collect 3,000 gallons of leaked gas mixed with water. Three households nearest the tank farm are still displaced until more gas is collected. The leak is ongoing, and crews need to remove more of the gasoline before they can gain access to the source. Crowley's public information officer Jim Butler says there's no indication that any of the gasoline has escaped the line containment area. The spill is the second in 2 months for Crowley. The other happened at another storage facility a mile below Aniak in March. Butler says once the cleanup effort is complete, Crowley will investigate the incidents to see if there is a connection.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Center for Distance Education at UAF, offering online courses from any location. Information at distance.uaf.edu/learn. First National Bank, Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. And by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for over 30 years.
A Fairbanks wood pellet manufacturer is positioned to capitalize on the spike in oil prices. Superior Pellet Fuels opened a plant off the Richardson Highway south of Fairbanks last fall. Company general manager Chad Schumacher says the new mill has been running at less than 50% capacity as it works out kinks in the operation.
We definitely have gone through a learning curve over the last 6 months, but right now the facility is running better than ever.
The pellet mill is turning waste wood from tree clearing into 300 tons of pellets per week. The pellets fuel specialized stoves and boilers, but have been slow to attract interest due to moderate oil prices in recent years. Schumacher anticipates more demand for pellets due to oil's recent spike.
Residentially, there's nothing going to drive the development of the pellet industry as much as high fuel oil prices. Right now, we're real close to a 40% cost savings by burning wood pellets versus fuel oil.
Pellet appliances burn cleaner than traditional wood stoves, and Schumacher says the local fine particulate pollution problem is also expected to drive demand for pellets. He says wood pellets are also being considered as an alternative fuel for coal-fired power plants at the University of Alaska Fairbanks and local military bases. Recycling is about to expand in the Fairbanks area. K&K Recycling in North Pole has worked out a deal with the borough and its waste hauling contractor to collect paper, glass, cardboard, plastic, and metals at local transfer sites. K&K already collects recyclables from the University of Alaska Fairbanks and area military bases. But access to borough transfer sites has been a roadblock. K&K owner Bernie Carl says all parties are compromising to change that.
We're going to put our differences aside and make recycling work. So you will see recycling at every transfer station as we progress. I mean, it's going to happen.
Carl says the first transfer site is expected to be set up next week. He says his company has invested $500,000 in new dumpsters and trucks to collect and move materials to K&K's North Pole facility for reuse, including fuel for a high-tech biomass power plant being developed in cooperation with United Technologies.
What we have going in is cardboard, paper, and wood. And what we have coming out is electricity, 500 kW an hour, going to Golden Valley Electric to 37,000 ratepayers at a half cent under the avoided cost over 20 years. That means that every ratepayer right now will be getting $2.97 every year in their pocket.
Carl says borough residents will also see savings in landfill-related costs. He needs 5,000 tons of biomass per year to fuel the power plant, a fraction of the 114,000 tons taken to the landfill every year. Carl's long-range plan is even greener, channeling CO2 emissions from the biomass generator to a large greenhouse to grow produce. The Renewable Energy Alaska Project, or REAP, kicks off their third annual conference tomorrow at the Dena'ina Convention Center in Anchorage. REAP spokeswoman Stephanie Nowers says the conference focuses on the business of clean energy, from building efficient new structures to retrofitting old ones.
The rural energy efficiency section is going to feature all sorts of programs that are going on across the state, different ways that they're finding to make that energy efficiency work, from Angoon to the Nana Regional Corporations area.
Nauer says there will also be workshops that highlight programs in the state, such as Rural Caps Energy Wise.
That Energy Wise program has a very strong community component. So in terms of having people in their own community who are interested in doing this, this conference is a place for them to come learn about the programs that are out there and what they can do of their own initiative.
Keynote speakers this year will be National Green Energy Building expert Jerry Udelson and the director of the Center for New Energy Economy, former governor of Colorado, Bill Ritter. The conference runs through Friday. The group tasked by the state of Alaska to decide matters related to municipal boundaries Tuesday night approved the city of Dillingham's proposal to annex the Nooshigak Commercial Fishing District into city boundaries. KDLG's Mike Mason attended the 2 days of public testimony and the decisional meeting of the local boundary commission and then filed this report.
The main issue that was brought up time and time again during the public hearing was the fairness of the City of Dillingham's proposal to ask voters in Dillingham to impose a 2.5% local fish tax on the Nooshigak Commercial Fishing District. Such a tax would bring in hundreds of thousands of additional dollars to the city. The only entity to file a responsive brief to the city's annexation petition was the native village of Ekuk. The village was represented by Attorney Jim Baldwin from Juneau, who stressed to the members of the LBC the importance of Nooshigak Bay, not just to Dillingham, but to the native villages in the region.
It's everybody's workplace, it's everybody's grocery store, and it's special for that reason. And for that reason, it should be, if it's going to be governed and covered by a government, it should be a government that's inclusive of everyone in the region, not just a government that's run by a city.
After hours of consideration, the five members of the local boundary commission approved the proposed annexation, but with a rather unique condition attached. The condition sprang out of concerns by members of the commission that the proposed 2.5% local fish tax outlined in the annexation petition would adversely impact commercial fishermen from the villages in the Nooshigak Bay region. The condition, approved unanimously by the LBC, called for the City of Dillingham to attempt to meet with the area villages to discuss post-annexation financial matters. The city is then required to submit a report about their efforts to the LBC by November 30th. After the report is reviewed by the LBC, they can then delve back into the Dillingham annexation petition if they're not satisfied with the efforts of the City of Dillingham to meet and discuss the financial matters with the leaders in the area villages of Alignagik, Ekwok, Noustuyahok, Kaliganik, Clark's Point, and Ekuk. The chair of the local boundary commission is Lynn Crystal.
We do anticipate that there will be some successful negotiations done. I mean, we're not saying this just to say it, so we would anticipate that there will be a good faith effort on all parties to try to come forth with some kind of a solution for us.
With the approval of the annexation petition with the attached condition, the next step in the process is for the City Council of Dillingham to set the date for the local election of city residents on the annexation proposal. It's anticipated that the proposed 2.5% local fish tax would also be placed before voters at that time. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
Anchorage Chickens scored a 9-2 victory at the Municipal Assembly last night. Under a new ordinance, residents can keep up to 5 chickens or rabbits on normal-sized urban lots. KSKA's Len Anderson has more.
As Anchorage-based Julie Riley of the University of Alaska Cooperative Extension Service told the Assembly, chickens have become increasingly popular across the city.
In November of 2009, we had standing room only for a class on chickens at the Millennium Hotel. Last Friday at 11 a.m., we had 50 people signed up for the class and decided that we should shut off the registration.
And the chicken supporters flocked to the Assembly's Tuesday night meeting, determined to convince the members that noise, dirt, poop, and odor issues, as well as predator attraction, were all controllable. Marcia Schmidt took on most of those issues.
I've had my chickens for 3 years now. They provide me with entertainment, joy, and learning experiences. They are also a source of food for eggs, and I use their droppings for compost to nourish my vegetable garden, another food source. I keep a clean coop and have no problem with odor or pests. I have had no complaints from neighbors. In fact, they enjoy watching and listening to my birds.
Lucy Peckham, with the Coalition of Backyard Pets, sought to help assembly members put that potential chicken fertilizer into a familiar perspective.
I'm a dog owner, so let's compare output. A 40-pound dog generates about 3/4 of a pound of poop per day. 10 chickens, more than most of us will ever own, generate about 2/3 of a pound of daily output.
Peckham also discussed fears about attracting predators.
Bears, wolves, other animals have not proven an obstacle in Juneau, Alaska, Calgary and Banff, Alberta, Billings and Bozeman, Montana, and Boulder, Colorado, to name just a few cities with urban predators and legal backyard pets.
Under the new rules, chickens and rabbits can be kept outdoors in lots of 6,000 square feet or more. Previously, it was 40,000 square feet. However, it's hens only. Noisier fowl, such as roosters, turkeys, geese, and peacocks, remain restricted to the larger lots. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Casey Kelly and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, Shane Iverson in Bethel, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Len Anderson in Anchorage, and Mike Mason in Dillingham. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Full Circle. Full Circle grows, picks, and delivers fresh, certified organic produce year-round. More information about their 400-acre farm and their organic partners at fullcircle.com.
And by
AT&T. Rethink possible. Details at att.com/Alaska or 1-800-252-7266.
One answer to our state's declining oil production? Port McKenzie Rail Project. The link from the Alaska Railroad to a deepwater port will bring billions in mineral production and thousands of jobs. This message sponsored by the Matanuska-Susitna Borough.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.